You're listening to the Mythgreen Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Wes Matlock, and Chris Winkle. There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought a red guitar.
This episode is brought to you by our patron, Kathy Ferguson, professor of political theory in Star Trek.
And welcome everyone to another episode of the Mythgreens Podcast. I'm Oren, with me today is...
Wes.
And joining us is returning special guest host, Reese.
What's up?
Welcome, Reese. Hey.
Hey, glad to be back.
Yeah, so today we are talking about how creators interact with fans, and I have created a thing or two. I don't know if that makes me a creator, but I have found that the best thing to do is to argue incessantly with your fans.
Oh, definitely.
Like, that's all I see. That's the best model.
For long periods of time.
And definitely, like, just never back down. Just don't ever, ever back down.
No. It's that makes you look really good. Like, people like it when you do that.
Yeah, you can't be a creator if you're a quitter.
That's a good slogan. I'll put that on a t-shirt. All right, so Reese, this topic was your idea, so I'd be interested to hear your lead-in for this.
Yeah.
So I actually want to lead in with some positivity on this topic. Because I feel like one of the great things that not just creators, but people who contribute to a thing, so like actors, can do is encourage creativity in their audience. Some of the, like, most recent examples that were close to me during Emerald City Comic Con, got to go to the Critical Role panel in which two of the members were talking about just how much they enjoy seeing the fan art. And if you're not familiar with Critical Role, they're a D&D podcast run by a bunch of voice actors, and they actually, like, include fan art in their videos, and Geek and Sundry has it up on the website. And it's just really cool to see, you know, these creators really taking in and appreciating what the fans are turning out in response to what they're doing.
Yeah, well, I think that it's been shown pretty clearly now that, at least for some people, like, positive fan interactions can be a big part of a show's appeal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, depending on what it is. But, like, you know, obviously there's, I would say that it's one of the main features of, say, the various you know, McElroy brother productions are the McElroy brothers themselves, right? Like, people like them and they like their personas, and, you know, they like going onto Twitter and tweeting at them. That's definitely a thing that helps spread their brand, as it were.
Oh, definitely. And that carries through into other things that they're part of that necessarily they're, like, they don't necessarily do. So, like, things on Polygon also have that kind of, like, people go there not just for gaming news, but because they like the personas of the people who are working there and, like, interacting with them.
At the same time, like, it's a thing where it's like, I don't want to tell anyone who wants to make art that, like, they have to be out there, like, interacting with the people who buy their art. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it's a case of, if it's something that you are, if you like doing that sort of thing, it's like, if you are, you know, a people person and you enjoy interacting with people, then that can be a strong bonus for you. But it's, at least from my experience, it's not something that you should, like, try to force yourself to do if you don't like it, because then you're gonna come across as, you know, unfriendly or what have you, and that will not be good, right? That will hurt you.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, but I think, but there's, I don't know, like, I was thinking about this, and it seems like there's just a ton of pressure on all creators to like also be their own marketers and publicists, right? Like if if you're a it doesn't matter what you create, like you need to be on all the social channels all the time, answering your fans, talking, because if you don't spread your personal profile, you will fail. I feel like there's this narrative out there that you have to do that. And I'm worried that to some extent that's true. And I hate that, because if you're, if you just want to create and hang out then and not talk to anybody, you should be able to do that. But
yeah,
you're right, Oren. Like there's like, you're worried that if you don't, you might be perceived as, you know, a misanthrope who like doesn't care about their fans. Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, let me put it this way. The whole, like, you need to have a platform, that certainly seems to be more and more common now. And if my research is correct, and it might not be, but it seems to be part of the traditional, at least in terms of books, it seems to be part of the traditional publishing industry kind of cannibalizing itself to try to compete with self-publishing. And that's one of the things that they've done now, is that they expect you to have your own, you know, online presence, and like be famous or you know, be likable or whatever. And that's definitely, you know, that has downsides, right? Like the ability to interact with creators has created a lot of great positive experiences. We have all these wonderful Mark Hamill tweets, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like with, yes. You know, with in previous, you know, decades, we wouldn't have had those things. But I do think you're right that if you're someone who is, you know, could be a perfectly good person, but just doesn't really like interacting with lots of people on the internet, or going to cons or whatever, that, you know, that could certainly hurt you. I don't know for sure that it will. I do know that it will hurt you more if you don't like doing those things and you try to force yourself and you do them badly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're better off being someone like, say, Susan Collins, who, as far as I know, has very little interaction. Susan Collins being the author of The Hunger Games. Mm-hmm. Like, at least, if maybe she doesn't, I just don't know about it. But from what I've been able to find, she does very little interaction with her fans. Mm. Like, she doesn't talk a lot. Her online presence is not big. She has a website, technically, but it's not a very good one. but whatever, that's fine. Like, she's not out there, right? You know, she's like, she wrote some books, and she was like, if you like my books, read them, whatever. And that's fine. I think you're better off being that than like an author who is constantly pissing their fans off by saying the wrong thing.
There's
right?
something really charming about just doing the bare minimum on like the internet.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I think that's something you still can do that. But we are definitely in an age where anything you try to sell to people, you have so much competition, especially in an artistic field, that if you want to stand out, one of the ways to do that is by having like a, you know, a distinctive online personality. And that's a thing that has helped a lot of other creators,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you all think about, I mean, you know, vlogs and casts and tweets and, I mean, creator types, you know, get paid to create, but social media is generally like consumed for free. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm just, there's a lot of, energy put into that process, and so I guess I'm inspired by Reese's comments about positive creative interactions with fans, because I think I'm just a little bit of a negative on this, thinking that all that energy somehow takes away from the creative process and they're like giving more art or more entertainment away for free rather than like getting compensated for their talents that deserve to be compensated. I mean, please correct me, like, if like there are more examples of this, but I feel like fans ask so much of their creators, and there's a very fine line to walk, right? Between like how the creator like responds and answers questions, what kind of questions they get asked, whether or not they engage in argument, and then the extent to which they speculate about their own works, right? It's like some people love the things that creators make, and then they talk to them and suddenly the creator says, whoa, crap, they really love all this stuff. Like, what can I say about it that won't destroy that? And also not like, I don't know, you know, ruin something that I said already in my work. the balance here is very fascinating. I'm just wondering if like either of you have encountered any like tips or thoughts or had your own interactions with creators to like try to provide a path forward. Because if I met some of my favorite creators, I think I probably would just sit down and shut up and like let somebody else talk to them.
I have definitely gone for that approach before, where I have gotten to meet some people I very, very much admire, and have just tried to be a fly on the wall and listen to them talk about their stories, and let other fans really do the interaction with. And yes, that can be really cool and you can learn a lot just by being a fly on the wall. But I think that when you're interacting with a creator, or when you're a creator interacting with a fan, there is definitely give on the part of the creator, but there is also take there. Especially if you're getting good energy from, that sounds so woo-woo, if you're getting good no, energy. Good. But no, if like your fans are giving you this kind of appreciation or saying, you know, this has changed my thoughts on this, I've had these ideas about your creation, but I want to know, you know, where you're coming from a personal standpoint or from a character standpoint, like that can definitely take a lot, especially if you don't want to give certain things or you don't want to wreck a story for someone. But it can also get you to think critically about your work and say, mm-hmm. you know, why did I have this character do this? Does it matter in the context of the world that I've created or within the internal narrative of this character? So there is like a balance there between giving all you can to a fan or an audience, and sort of taking back from that like the goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like I definitely think that it's one of those things where I kind of view interactions with fans as a kind of marketing, mm-hmm. In terms of how a creator allocates their energy, because, you know, regardless of if you measure it in like spoons or spells per day and what your reserves are, like most people don't have an unlimited amount of time and energy they can spend in a day, right? So like there is a certain amount of like, you know, going online and interacting with fans in some capacity, be that, you know, tweeting with them or, you know, posting, you know, question and answer or going or even going to a con or what have you, you know, that does, you know, help you to a certain extent. It's like it's a form of marketing. Mm-hmm. But you know, you can spend too much on it. I don't really know exactly what the balance is. For as far as my own creations go, I'm still at the point where like anybody expressing interest in something that I've made is like, oh my God, they read what I did. And oh my God, you know, so like, I'm sure at some point that balance switches, right? I'm sure once you get like, start getting a whole bunch of fan mail in various forms, at some point, the idea that people are out there looking at your stuff stops being wonderful and novel and just becomes normal. So that might not boost you as much as it does currently for me. As far as going into more detail, because sometimes people will ask, "Oh, what did you mean by this?" Like I've had I've posted a couple stories and I had people ask, like on one of them, I had them ask like, "Well, so like, why did the evil grandmother want these werewolves in the first place?" And I was like, you know, that's a good question. I don't really know. And so I told them, it's like, you know, I didn't really have an answer for that in my headcanon. It's this, but that's not more, you know, relevant. That's not more real than anything that you would come up with. You know, that's just this thing where it's like, I guess I was a little bit on a tangent there, but that's the sort of thing that like I would want an author to tell me if I asked them a question that like they didn't have an answer to, rather than like trying to make up something that sounds deep and meaningful.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, I think one of my, like, it's not like really like a peeve of sorts, but there's this idea that I have, it could be unfounded and not real for everybody, but if a fan asks creator, why did you do this, right? Well, one, mm-hmm. that is kind of accusatory. Mm-hmm. And then two, there's a perception that the creator is the gatekeeper of all knowledge of the universe, right? That since they wrote the book or made the film, they dictate the narrative in all forms. And so then either questions about why are going to be argumentative, or their questions about, well, you made this, so you know all the answers. Tell us all the answers. And I don't
right now.
Like right now. And I don't like that, because I don't like authorial intent is a big problem, and readers have just as much power. If a reader says, hey, why did you do this? I think the creator should say, why do you think I did? And the fans' like response to that question is as valid, like if they can support it based on like the media, the text or the film or whatever. Like, I mean, you have power as a fan, and as a creator, you're not obligated to answer them at all. And maybe pushing the questions back a little bit could let them, as like Reese was saying, foster some creativity or whatever. It might like be fun to toss ideas around or something like that.
No,
yeah, it's a little bit of a rant. I'm sorry.
I definitely agree with that, though, on especially on the line of, as a creator, you do not owe an answer, like, period. End of discussion. Like, you don't actually owe an answer or an explanation. You don't owe a certain amount of, you know, time spent on this part of what you're doing. You are creating, yes, for yourself and to sell, presumably. Like, presumably, yeah, you want to sell some stuff. but it's your creation, and you can say, like Oren said, I didn't think about it. Like, that wasn't part of it. And I think the mirroring back of the question is a really good way of handling it without shutting down the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one thing that I've noticed, and like, this is definitely something that was my position, it probably still is sometimes, is that fans very often, they don't know which questions to ask. They don't have the context. Like, you know, it's very common where if you're a successful whatever, right, like a successful comic artist or a successful novelist or what have you, you know, fans will ask you, how did you become successful? And that's like, they don't know that is a question that very often has no answer.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because very often it's like, you know, my path to whatever success I have was so like windy and weird and full of like random events that would be very hard to replicate and stuff like that, that it's like, I don't really have an answer. So like, but you know, that's not a thing that fans often know, right? And I certainly didn't know that before I was, you know, involved more in the creative process myself. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, that seemed like a reasonable question to ask. So that's definitely something I think you should be like prepared for. And then it can also be useful to like kind of judge, like when someone asks like, why did you do this in a story or what have you, are they like, it can be useful to try to figure out like if they are asking on like a technical level, like are they another writer in your field or what have you, and they want to know like, what purpose did this scene serve in the narrative and the plot, or did they want to know like, you know, what does it mean that this character's laser sword was red? And it's like, well, maybe, I don't know if it means anything. You know,
he really, really liked red.
Yeah. Red is awesome.
It's just a great color, man. The time that you have to do that is going to be very dependent on to what level you are like known and how famous you are. Right. If you're getting like 1,000 questions a day, probably don't have time to like look at each of them and compare and be like, okay, when this person asks like, why did this character have to die, do they mean like, what was the pathos purpose that it served, or are they just upset that this character died?
Yeah, That's a good point, Oren. I mean, like, yeah, if you are going to be fielding questions, anticipate the questions you might be asked and maybe prepare how you like would respond to such statements. And it's probably good advice, too, that if you're going to be interacting with some of your beloved creators, like, take some time to think over your questions and maybe consider what would be a satisfactory answer, right? Like, like maybe like ask something that you honestly think is answerable, and maybe avoid asking questions that you have prepared responses to, right? Because that's leading into argument. Hey, why did you do this? Because I'll tell you why you shouldn't have done it.
Right. Yeah. Or like, oh gosh, this isn't just a problem when interacting with creators, but like anytime you're at like a convention or whatever, and it's like question and answer time, and someone's like, I don't really have a question so much as a statement. It's like, no, please no.
Please don't.
I came here to listen to that person talk, not you.
Yeah, gosh.
It's like, I try really hard to, like, when I go up to ask a question, to actually have a question, right? That's, like, just a nice bit of etiquette there. If in any situation where, like, you're in a, you know, where there is someone speaking from some position of authority and you are going to ask them something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like a battle of the wits. You're not there to show off how smart you are. Like,
oh, well, I mean, maybe you're not. Well,
Uh-oh.
Aww.
That's why I never go.
Yeah, right. There's something else to consider, again, and this is really more for the fans' perspective, is that a lot of the times creators are not really in positions where they can answer you honestly. And this is, like, most common with, like, actors, for who I consider to be part of the creative process, mm-hmm. even if they aren't, like, the writer or whatever. Like, actors can't criticize a movie they were in. Mm-hmm. Like, they just can't, mm-hmm. okay? Because they want to get more work, and they're not going to get more work if they cause, like, a stink about something they just worked for. Even if it's garbage. Even if they know it's garbage, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. They can't say that. And, like, I was frankly amazed that Mark Hamill said anything even remotely critical about Last Jedi.
True, but like, didn't he say that before he actually started acting out the role? I was thinking about, well, is that like a way to get around it?
No. Okay, so the timeline on that was kind of weird. Like, he said that stuff in, like, he said he was critical about his role as Luke's, about, like, the Luke Skywalker character in the movie, and like he said sort of that stuff like in the rounds leading up to the film's like press release or like, you know, the being filmed for critics.
Mm-hmm.
And then he like changed his mind and, you know, said that like, I changed my mind on my own. Stop accusing this of being a conspiracy. And I was like, I mean, okay. The timing on that's a little suspicious, Mark. Can I call you Mark? Are we on a first name basis?
Mr. Hamill.
Yeah, but like whatever, you know, like I don't know if he actually changed his mind or if someone from Disney called him and was like, Mark, come on, who knows. I don't really think it matters in this context. And it's the same thing with, like, you know, most of the time when a book is adapted into a movie,
mm-hmm.
like most of the time the author has extremely limited say on what happens there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, talking to the author and like demanding to know why, like, you know, it's like, Mr. Tolkien, why was Tom Bombadil not in the Lord of the Rings movies? And Tolkien's like, well, first of all, I'm dead, but if I wasn't, you know, like I probably didn't make that choice, right?
I would go to a Tolkien seance. Side note,
yeah, definitely.
I mean, I know when like I went to like his house in England, I was like yelling that at the wall, just like, you know, just like, Tolkien, why no Tom Bombadil? What's up with that?
Answer me.
And this is like, I guess maybe more of a pet peeve than anything else, but like, if you are a creator and like you know that there's like some critique or something people didn't like about your work or whatever, going on and like explaining it and being like, no, it makes sense for this reason, even if you don't like directly address the critiques, that's not great, man. It's like, it doesn't, if whatever it was needed to be explained, it was probably a problem to begin with, so you can just like just let the work speak for itself, all right?
Totally.
Yeah. And yeah.
That's akin to like going on and saying, now this is why this joke is funny. I'm gonna tell you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Just, it's not a good look. It's not a good look from anyone's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, like, the flip side of that is if you are a fan and, like, you're going to go talk to a creator and, I guess Wes might have already mentioned something like this, but, it like, you're not going to get a great response if you're phrasing your questions as a critique.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, if you're, like, you know, it's like, if you think that, for example, if you get to the end of the book and, like, you think that the ending wasn't resolved, that's a perfectly legitimate opinion for you to have, mm-hmm. right? But going to the creator and being like, why didn't you resolve the main plot thread at the end of this book? Is like, you know, chances are they probably think it was resolved, and they're not going to have an answer for you that you want, and it's just not going to be good, and it's like, just don't do that.
Yeah, just don't. I feel like that there are some like rules with interaction, and I say rules in heavy quotation marks, but like, be cool, be kind, and be willing to listen.
Yep.
Those are kind of the three things on either side of that. Is just be cool and be open. And if both parties are play by those rules, it can be a really cool, constructive, like, fulfilling interaction. But if mm-hmm. one or both don't, it's just gonna be bad.
Yeah I would add a negative imperative to that list for creators only. And don't, like, if you choose to, like, explain or talk about, like, your works, don't add stuff about, like, the work that, like, wasn't in the work. If it's, like, really important, put it in there. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can cite, like, examples. I know that, like, Rowling is what'd you call her once, Oren? The master of the retcon. Yeah. The retcon in chief. You know, it's just like, yeah. And if you get questions related to that, just like, that's a good one to maybe, like, pass on, because if you didn't put it in the work, then clearly it wasn't that important to you in the moment. So
my favorite was when people were asking Rian Johnson about the hyperspace RAM in Last Jedi, and instead of just being like, it's a really beautiful scene and I wanted it in the movie, which is clearly what happened, because it is a beautiful scene, it's probably the most beautiful visual I've ever seen in a Star Wars film, mm-hmm. He instead of just saying that, he was like, yeah, well, they probably haven't used it before because it was, like, probably illegal. And I was like, why did you say that?
What are you saying?
It's like, what are you talking about, Rian? What's going on? So, you know, stuff like that. It's just, it doesn't make you look good, okay? It's frankly, like, I don't think he would say this, because this would come off as sounding, like, critical of the movie, but I would just love it if he had been like, yeah, it's a really beautiful scene, and I wanted it, and I wasn't super concerned about the plot ramifications. It's like, yeah, okay, that's clearly what happened, so sounds good.
That's literally just lean into the mic and go, I did it for the aesthetic, and back off.
Yeah, that's, I like how honest that is. That's fine. If somebody just said that to me, I'd be like, all right, great answer. Thank you.
Good work. I mean, like, again, he can't say that, right? Because he has, like, he represents a much larger brand that he does not own and control, right? But, you know, it'd be cool. Yeah.
And he doesn't have the tenure that Mr. Hamill has.
Right. Like, you know, he still has that next trilogy that he doesn't want Disney to take away from him, right? I will admit that I do think that there are some venues that are much better suited to interactions than others. Like, you know, if nothing else, online spaces are, like, I find them to be a much better venue for interacting with creators, simply because there's much less of a chance that a creator will, like, stick around when they really feel like they shouldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something that, like, that's one of the reasons why I'm always really hesitant to go and approach creators at cons for, like, you know, if they're, like, you know, selling autographs or what have you. Because, like, you know, they've been doing that for a long time. They've seen, like, probably a bunch of people. And, like, at that point, you know, I would be sick of people if I was doing that.
Yeah.
And so it's not, I don't really think it's realistic to expect them to be in a great mood,
mm-hmm.
but, like, I also don't want to have a negative interaction with my favorite Star Trek actor, right? It's like, you know, it's like, I understand, you know, Avery Brooks, you've probably signed like 500 autographs already today. I get why you're cranky, but I also don't really want to have to go home and be like, Avery Brooks yelled at me.
That's a good point. It's like, the ease with which we can connect with our fans or our creators, like, you should still set like boundaries, you mm-hmm. know, like if you're going to decide that interacting with my fans is an important thing to do, then, you know, like have an AMA, like once a month, you know, like, or whatever time frame works. And then, you know, that like, that's what I'm going to be doing during that time. And I can devote myself to it. And then you don't have to worry about fan mail the other weeks or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you do like an AMA, but like ask me certain things related in context? Because like, I don't know if I want to get people to ask me anything.
Right. Ask me all right. Anything about my work.
see, it's ask me anything. It's not I'll answer anything.
Oh. Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, we are pretty much out of time for that. So speaking of asking us anything. If anything we said piqued your interest, you can leave a comment on the website. And, you know, we don't have enough comments at this point that, like, they just swing by. So there's a good chance we'll respond. We'll see. otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving us a review on iTunes so we can continue to grow like a swarm of nanites. There was a dragon with a pointy tail. When he came around, tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. He accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Coulton.